Let's turn our attention to our next guest, anyone who watched England's winning test series against Australia last month, and all about the levels of fitness that open side James Haskell has. The Wasps back row outplayed Michael Hooper, regarded by many as the best seven currently in world rugby. Maybe not anymore, I think, James. He's sharing his secrets how to maintain astonishing fitness levels in a brand new book called An Introduction to Becoming and Remaining Rugby Fit. I'm delighted to say that James is in the studio with us. Anyone who knows anything will also know, James, that you got a bit of an injury. So how's the toe?
Yes, okay. Obviously disappointed, you know, from my point of view. I love the summer tour. I've loved this season. Wasps have had some success. Obviously, we fell short in two semi-finals, which is disappointing, but we got a grand slam with England and went and tour to Australia, and that kind of went well. But unfortunately, I've done my toe. People keep asking me what I've actually done to it. I obviously quite do a lot of stuff on social media, so people are asking. Yeah. No one's put anything out there, but I've got a little broken bone in my foot, and I've done some stuff to some tendons and everything else. It's a little bit tricky and complicated, so it's not that simple to explain. But hopefully, 4 months' time, I'll be back running around doing what I love.
Off the back of what was a magnificent tour for everyone down under, the Six Nations as well, but the tour, the way that the series was won, first ever time, your personal performance. I suppose some people might say it's not ideal timing because you are at the peak, mate.
I think, you know, in professional sport, you've got to deal with these kind of things. I came to terms with it as soon as I found out I was planning to go on holiday. Mm. I went in and see the specialist because my obviously I wasn't able to play the third test. He came in, said, oh, you know, I think we'll be all right. I think we'll avoid surgery. Went and did a scan, checked it again and went, no, you're going to have surgery. And right. There was about 20 minutes where I was head in hands going, oh, God, what have I done? What am I going to do? And then and I just came to terms with it, you know, and I just realised that for me, it's a great opportunity to come back stronger and better.
Yeah.
As a player, you never want to let anyone have your shirt, but you've got to realise that, you know, it's a very transitory experience. You kind of can't hold on to it. And it's not like a video game, unfortunately, where you get to save your progress and come back later. You've kind of got to rebuild, and I'll do that. And I've seen the positives, you know, that lay ahead. As I said, we've got such an attritional season. Our professional rugby has become, from where I started when I was 17 to where I am now, a completely different game. There's no easy games. There's not much rest. Last year was a year from hell for everybody. And it'll mean that hopefully my body will maybe last a little bit longer than I thought.
Actually, a bit of recovery time, which you don't get in a especially if you're playing at international level as well as club rugby. There is little time for recovery.
Yeah, there isn't. And obviously, sometimes in the season, we have things like the Power Gin Cup, or I think it's still the Power Gin or something like that. I can't remember what exactly the tournament. We didn't have it this year, so that's sometimes an opportunity to play some younger players. So younger players didn't get that much rugby because every week was just one another game after another game. There wasn't a lot of time for coaching and development because literally, you know, for me personally as well, I know for a lot of players, it takes 2 or 3 days to recover after a game. So the first 2 days are pretty obsolete. You can't do a lot of training. Then you're straight into to performing for the next weekend, and then you go round and round and round. Then you put England in the mix. Obviously, the way we're trying to train at the moment with that kind of high intensity, the fact that, you know, Eddie makes it very clear that it's you know, it's an aspirational environment. If you take your foot off your gas, you're out the door. Mm. You know, and obviously, all done in a positive way. You've got to make sure that you you're always working, always training. So that's when things like recovery, diet, all that kind of stuff come into play.
Has that been one of the differences with Eddie? Just tweaks?
I think that the biggest tweak for me with Eddie Jones has been his man management skills. He's a guy that knows exactly how to speak to players. He understands that sports people are like anyone else in business or in life. Some people need the stick, some people need the carrot. You know, some people need an arm around them. And he knows how to speak to guys. He knows also that you've got to give enough rope to hang yourself with. You know, you treat people as adults, speak to them as adults, let them be who they're going to be. And you quickly wheedle out the people that aren't on board. And also, he makes it fun. Makes it really fun. And he's surrounded by, you know, 3 fantastic coaches, with Paul Gustav, Steve Borthwick and Neil Hatley. All of them are really good guys, very engaging. And you'll find that a lot of players, especially the ones I know, and myself included, want to get better. Doesn't matter how old you are, you keep wanting to develop your game, you keep wanting to learn, and these guys make it very easy to learn and very easy to communicate, and that's all you can ask for, really.
Is that, but that's part of what you're doing with what you have. I mean, obviously, you've brought your book out, but you've got a website, you encourage health and fitness. Is that something that you want to pass on? Because you've sort of, it's something that, you know, to be a professional sportsman at the peak that you are in the sport that you play, fitness is hugely important. Nutrition, recovery, rest, warming up, training. they're a huge part in being able to do 80 or 60, 70 minutes, whatever you're doing on a match though.
I think there's a few things really, the reasons I do what I do is that my dad always told me when I came back from training in the early WASP days, you know, I could get off the sofa, stop playing Xbox and go and do something, or I could waste my life away after training. I probably should have done more recovery than I did because I've always had quite an intense work life off the field, but I've always been driven by the desire to perform. So when a lot of people were going on holiday or doing stuff, I would train through my holidays. You know, I remember going to Vegas with the boys on a boys trip and disappearing through the day to go and do fitness training and that kind of stuff. And I've always been my mentality. Only in later on in life, I probably learned it's more about recovery for me now. But that hard work stood me in good stead. And I just think with the advent of social media, where it's kind of broken down that barriers between fans and sports people. Mainly for the good, but obviously there are a few mad people out there who volunteer their opinion when they really shouldn't. And they always ask me questions the whole time. You know, what do you eat? What do you do? And I'd done some coaching academy stuff when I was younger. You know, we sort of set up doing summer camps and things like that. And I tried my hand at some different things. And I basically, you know, I was reading about an article about or watching one of those TED Talks, and it says, you know, if you're going to build a business, talk about what you know. And I'd always sort of had these questions about health and fitness. I'd always, you know, tried to keep myself in good shape. Whenever I'd been injured or whenever I had had a lull in my form, I would go and seek out the best people I could. You know, I worked with Margot Wells. I worked with Phil Lerner. I worked with my friend Travis Allen at the moment. You know, I've worked with Matt Lovell, loads of different nutritionists, loads of different people, tried some weird things, you know, whether that's running on a reverse treadmill with a harness or, you know, eating, you know, 7 chickens a day, whatever it is, you know, all these kind of weird and wacky and wonderful things to try and get the best performance, realise that some things don't work, some things do. And I kind of wanted to share that, really, and people were messaging me all the time, mainly young rugby players.
Yeah.
What do you eat? I want to take this supplement. I want to get bigger. I want to do this, I want to do that. And I got parents messaging me, go, oh, I had one the other day, my son's 10, and I'm thinking about bulking him up a bit. And I'm like, I basically realised that for any young player, because I'd been through there was so much rubbish put out there.
Yeah.
There was no, you know, you can pick up a copy of Men's Health, read it and get some ideas, but it's all quite generic stuff, you know, often it's not really put to you know, young players or whatever, and it's not made clear. And the biggest lessons I learned were, never compare yourself to what someone else is doing, because you'll always get another opinion and feel you're falling short. Don't find a plan and stick with it. And don't try and, you know, chop and change and add things in there. If you give yourself a program, stick to it for an allotted period of time. And then after the 12 weeks, look back and go, did I get results? If not, find someone else. And with this book, I just decided to put all my thoughts into one place, which kind of dispelled a lot of the nonsense that was put out there.
Yeah.
I kind of made it very clear that rugby is not a game about being massive. That was the one thing that everyone was obsessed with.
Mm.
And it's probably where I fell short earlier on in my career. I kind of wanted to, you know, the WASP locked me in the gym. I was with Warren Gatland and those kind of things. He liked his players big. I was with a guy called Tom Rees, who's now retired. He's becoming a doctor, actually. And we were both locked in the gym for 6 months because we both came out of school quite skinny. So that sort of set off a mentality with me. But then halfway through my career, I realised that wasn't going to make me the best rugby player, and I needed to be, you know, good at rugby. And I think Phil Greening, the ex-player, once said to me, "There's no point being able to lift a cow if you can't outrun one, and or outsmart one." So I kind of changed my opinion, and in my book, I kind of spell that out to young players. Look, it's about the core skills of the game. It's about enjoying yourself. If you want to stand out in a trial, here's what my experience of it. If you want to develop and eat properly, diet's going to be essential to everything. Stay away from the supplements. You know, I mean, I get probably 10 messages a day on my Facebook or my Instagram, what supplements you recommend. And in the book, all we talk about is eating properly, eating healthy, and enjoying your sport. And I just tried to create it so it would help any young rugby player, male or female, or anyone looking to get into training, give them a little taste of each area of training, which would be the cardio, the weights, the eating, the core skills, the drills, passing drills, breakdown drills, everything. So someone could look at it and go, do you know what? This is going to set me in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And all the questions were there answered, because I've made more mistakes than most people. So I just wanted to make sure that it was very clear.
And the whole approach is important, as you say. It's not just about, you know, what training you do to actually maybe increase your cardio work, or it is about how you warm up as well. I mean, you know, you talk about your pre-warming up, you know, you do a pre-warm up, but also the nutritional side of things.
Yeah, I mean, again, for training, a lot of stuff comes in fashion and goes out of fashion. You'll read all the time in the papers, all you have to do is open a paper in London, find red wine's good for you, red wine's bad for you, eat broccoli, don't eat broccoli, this gives you cancer, this doesn't give you cancer. So everyone's thought processes are all changing the whole time. You know, we talked a lot about saturated fats years ago being demonized as being really bad for you.
And now
everyone's saying, have fats, have your coconut oils, everything else. So what I've tried to do with my book is make sure that the lessons I give you are going to be universal for whatever period of time. Obviously, some things will change, but the point is that things like recovery, you need to... you know, do various different protocols. There's no miracle recovery thing. Every time I play a game, I wake up in hell the next day, and then even more pain the next, you know, the following day. However, the best way to deal with that, you know, your ice baths, your compression, eating well, sleep, rest, bit of like exercise, get yourself moving, bit of stretching, bit of mobility, all those combined kind of take the edge off. But there's no one miracle thing. Until someone invents a miracle solution, that's what you've got to do. So everything in my book is kind of gives you the cornerstones, but the whole central theme is about you have to focus on the rugby. You're never gonna get good in rugby by built. You never get a good rugby player built in the gym. And my biggest thing I say in there as well is you know, some of the most powerful rugby players I've played against are not the biggest. You know, guys like Mike Brown, very difficult to tackle, difficult. You see him knock people over all the time. Dan Carter, you know, very strong. Those kind of guys are very physical characters, and people get bogged down in being massive. You know, unless you're Billy Vernopola's size, that kind of helps, for Nathan Hughes, but everything in between, it's more about your mobility, your speed, your actual core skills, like your passing and tackling.
Because, and the way the sport has gone, the way that rugby has developed as well, then actually those core skills are hugely important. I mean, you know, that people have got fitter, players have got fitter, the professionalisation of the game, but people have got fitter and fitter and fitter. But actually, you can't forget that actually playing rugby, that there are skills to rugby. It's how you tackle, how you break a tackle, how you, you know, set up an attacking move, all those things that. And also, I suppose, the sense you get, you've got to play rugby and enjoy it. Because if you're not enjoying a sport, and you know, only a small proportion, just like in any sport, only a small proportion of people who start playing rugby, like my son at, you know, minis and coming through sort of junior ranks, only a small portion are going to end up like you, James, as an international.
I mean, yeah, there's two massive points there. Is firstly, you know, you talk about the core skills. The core skills are probably leading to everything. So I get the messages, again, I had one the other day, from, and it's the same theme I get all the time. It could be from anyone. I keep getting knocked off in tackles. I need to be bigger. I need to be bigger. Well, to be honest with you, it's not anything to do with how much size you've got when you're tackling. It's the technique. It's how you, where you put your feet, where you put your head, how low you hit the guy, making sure you attack. All those little things. But people want to look for the easy solutions, or they don't understand because no one's taken them to one side and explained it to them. So again, that's what I try to do, is just steer people away from thinking that things can be solved with supplements and you know, lifting weights. Obviously, being powerful, having a strong, resilient body, and having that strength is really important. But you know, I just try to make sure that people understand that they've got to, again, enjoy the rugby. I meet a lot of people now, again, with social media and the fact that sport's on 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Everyone has access to it. You know, I didn't grow up watching rugby. I mean, my first experience with rugby was, I think, the 91 World Cup, England Australia. I remember walking in, my dad was watching it. I sat down, kind of watched it, and then I got into rugby because he took me when I was about 13 to watch Wasps play. Every week we became avid fans. I'd never supported a team, I'd never got involved, and I got to meet the players after the games and get autographs, because I think that's a good thing about rugby. They've still got the accessibility.
Really accessible. Yeah.
You know, you're never going to get to meet your football stars. You're never going to meet some of these sportsmen at rugby grounds. You still get to meet the fans. You still get to do that. And I think kids are now taking rugby so much more seriously. I see when I go to coaching young kids and stuff, and I see how serious they want to take it, and dads and parents, and they're asking, oh, I want to bulk up, I want to eat, I want to do this, and they know everything about everything. And now, because everyone's got a smartphone, everything's online for them, and there's so much weird advice and stuff out on the internet. I just thought that it's important for kids to realise that, A, make sure you work on an all-rounded, be an all-rounded person. That's why I do so much outside of rugby. I was there, unfortunately, when Matt Hampson broke his neck.
Yeah.
When we were under 21s, and I was on the scrum. He went down and he never walked again. He's achieved some amazing things, and it's been unbelievable. His foundation's incredible. Yeah. But that's how quickly things can change. And I, you know, of all the talented people that I came up with, I somehow managed to make it. Not because I was any better than them, I was probably less talented than most, but I had the lucky journey. And that's important for kids to understand that, A, they should enjoy pressure-free rugby, because pressure rugby is not that fun, and that there's no guarantee. So, you know, at school, I made sure I did all my exams. I made sure I did all the stuff. I did acting. I even represented the chess club, one game, one victory. I'll take that. But that was it. Do you know what I mean? I tried to make sure I do everything, and I've tried to keep that approach into outside my life by setting up this fitness business, by writing these books, by trying to give advice to people, because it's... it means if I was to, if my foot never heals and I wasn't able to play, then I'd be able to do something else.
Mm. And it's a good, as you say, because rugby itself is going through a very positive phase. The World Cup, obviously, England's maybe lack of success aside, but actually it brought home to people. But it's in a good place. I mean, we at the end of the Premiership final, we were there at Twickenham, and Seb Jewell was with us, and I was talking to Andy Rowley and myself, and we were saying that actually rugby at the moment in this country is in a really, really good place. Exeter obviously showed a great attitude in the second half of the game. Wasps are emerging and coming through. There's clubs that still maintain that club ethos. Rugby is in a really positive place, and then you transfer that to the international level. I mean, it's a great sport to be involved in at the moment, mate.
It is, but then you go back to the World Cup and off post-World Cup, and everyone lost their heads, you know, and it was suddenly... I think very much what's happened after Euro 2016, you know, with the England team, everyone kind of, because everyone's opinions now is so easily accessible and readily available, everyone gets a trial by social media, everyone is putting their two penny worth in, and it means that when things do go wrong, they go very badly wrong, because everything's blown out of proportion. And then because you've got 24-hour news, you've got people having to write constant things on social media and blogs or whatever, it means that stuff just keeps going and going. But I think rugby has always been in a good place. You know, I think with what Eddie Jones has done is incredible, but he did have a good pool of players. He had good talent. Mm. You know, we didn't just suddenly invent a whole set of new players. It was good. I think people just lost a little bit of perspective during the post-World Cup. I think, I'm not sure why anyone thought we were going to win it in the first place. I just think it was that kind of patriotism and everything else, but we hadn't consistently beaten Southern Hemisphere sides. We believe we could be able to go and win it, but you know, the odds or the statistics or whatever would say that it was probably a difficult task, but because everyone got behind it, because everyone's very passionate, when it doesn't go well, you know, everyone goes mad about it. But I think rugby's in a great place. I think it's got a lot of good morals, a lot of good things, and sort of a lot of life lessons to teach people in terms of camaraderie, a physical sport where you go out, you knock, you know, seven bells out of each other, and then you go and shake your hand afterwards. I love that aspect of it. Yeah. I think that the professional game is getting a little bit away from the social side. I think it's great. Post the third test in Australia, we went into the change room with the Australians, had a beer.
Yeah, that's great.
After Exeter played Wasps in the semi-finals, Jeff Parling invited us in. I think that's a great thing, because you just, now it's so wham bam thank you ma'am, you don't get to see anyone, you don't get to share that kind of,
and that's part of what rugby's about.
I think, you know, for some people as well, they've always said, oh, rugby has a drinking culture. In a professional thing, it just doesn't have that. I think at universities now there's still an element of that kind of stuff on club rugby, but even if you take that to one side, just having the socializing with people, the fact that you can take kids down on a Sunday, you know, my only thing that I think would make rugby unstoppable in this country is if we made it a summer sport, because I sometimes go down and coach kids on a Sunday and I see these tiny little kids running around freezing in mud, having to tackle each other, and there's nothing worse than getting hit when you're cold already.
I totally agree. I mean, I do it, and you see, and it's parents as well who have to stand out there in the cold, and it puts a lot of commitment. But yeah, if you were to suddenly switch it March through to October, and it would just, you know, certainly at that level.
But imagine you could have, even for the Premiership games, you could have longer hospitality, you could have longer games, you would be competing with cricket, not football, you get more column inches. And people always talk about the fields being hard. Well, yeah, I mean, maybe make it just start with a professional game and see if that filters down, or make club rugby in the summer. Do you know what I mean? Any of those things would make a massive difference, because I think there's so much good about rugby that people enjoy, and I hope it just keeps growing, because it is a great sport. And you know, there's a lot of good people playing it.
What about you then? I mean, obviously you've now got a hiatus that you probably didn't want, but you're going to, as you say, put a positive spin on it and use it to your advantage. Next summer, there's a Lions tour. That's got to be your focus.
There's two things in my rugby career three things, obviously, to win a World Cup, to play for the Barbarians, and to get a Lions tour. You know, I've used this joke before, but the closest I've ever got to the Lions was London Zoo. So I would love to get the opportunity to go there. It is any rugby player's dream. But I remember Lawrence Dallaglio told me this very early on in my career, that if you worry about your club form and your club goes well, then England takes care of itself. And if you go well for England, then the Lions come calling. You don't look at the Lions and go aim for them. You look at getting back fit for Wasps. And, you know, it's would be hard for me, because going from captaining Wasps the last couple of seasons to obviously not being there at the start of it, it means I'm going to get time to focus on some other things. I'm writing another book. This time for Hodder, which will be going into a news agent. You know, this book we sold as an ebook, The Introduction to Rugby Fitness. We've now teamed up with Gardeners, and they've kind of farmed it out into all kind of good bookshops. There's a website called hive.co.uk where you can get it from, on my website, jameshaskell.com. And I'll be updating that the whole time. My social media stuff, I've been doing some videos with Owen Farrell that people seem to have loved, and my kind of social media kind of stuff has gone up. But we always do YouTube videos, so I'll be super busy. I'm also DJing as well. I've got an obsession with that kind of thing. And basically, I think the injury will come at a good time, because I'll be able to focus on some other things. But the overriding goal is going to be Wasps, making sure that you don't fall between the cracks, because when you're injured, you're not out of sight, out of mind. I mean, you know, no one will escape escape me, but do you know what I mean? You just want to make sure you stay involved with the team, you do everything you do to help Wasps perform, and make sure that I get this injury right.
Yeah, and get back as quickly as you can, but not too quickly.
Well, I mean, the thing is, you just don't know, you know. Whenever you speak to surgeons, they always say one thing. You never know what the truth is going to be. The best thing for me is just to make sure that you do take one day, one week at a time. Rugby players are very good at compartmentalising. You know, we don't, it drives my girlfriend mad, because we don't plan any further ahead than you know, that week. You know, if there's anything going on, we kind of shut it down, because it's all about the performance. So I haven't thought too far ahead, really. I'm just going to literally tick the days off. I'm a bit nervous about the operation. No one likes to get put under, but you know, these things happen.
Yeah. Well, best of luck with that, and with your continued work as far as... So there is James Haskell Health and Fitness online.
Yeah, so www.jameshaskell.com has got everything we've got on it. You know, obviously I've got my social media channels. So we've got our Facebook page, which is kind of blowing up at the moment with the training and some of the funny videos, which is if you go to Facebook and type in JH Bodyfire. Obviously my social media is at James Haskell and at James Haskell on Instagram. So I'm always in there. I try to reply to a lot of people who send me messages as well. You know, I've been overwhelmed actually the last couple of months at the support we've had. You know, you talked about rugby being a good place. I mean, I've never been stopped so many times by people just coming up and saying, can I just shake your hand? I want to say how good the Australia tour was for everyone, how proud we are. Because I think people, it's obviously a bit of a difficult time, man, with Brexit and various things going on around the world. It's a bit of a topsy-turvy time, and I think people want to get behind teams and see people having fun and doing well. And for me, it's super humbling, mainly because I've never had so many people be nice.
James, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it, because you just jetted in, you've just seen your hospital, and then you've come to see us as well. So best of luck with the recovery, and we'll speak to you again. But thanks for your time.